episode 30 of ELO Punters. I didn't mess it up this time. My name's Anurag Das. I'm here with Bob Wong, and we have a special guest for everybody today. Ozymandias, a.k.a. Matthew Voke, is here to join us. If you haven't already heard of Ozymandias, well, I don't know. Are you living under a rock? Because this guy is tearing up the legacy scene, has been tearing up the legacy scene, will be tearing up the legacy scene. Matthew, how you doing?
I'm good. Hello, Twitch chat and everybody. It's like 4 o'clock here. I'm in Charlottesville, Virginia right now. Just hanging out.
Nice. Also, we have Bob here, too. Hey, it's Bob. Say hi to everybody.
What up? What up?
Nah, nobody cares. Voke! I call you Voke. I don't know why. It rhymes with Coke, by the way. V-O-O-K. And if anyone wants to know like how it's actually pronounced, I call you Voke. Does everybody call you Voke? I feel like that's the name that like most people like. Does anyone call you Matt? Matthew? Matthias?
I guess in person, either Matt or Voke.
Okay, cool. Good to know. Yeah. Well, you have had a pretty exciting weekend as far as I know. There was a lot of stuff going on here, but we got some things to take care of before we dive into that. There's a lot of juicy content. I know you have a lot of thoughts on Magic just in general. Trying to think. Okay, cool. Let's do the thing that we usually do, which is go through our new patrons. So thank you to Steven, Timothy, David, Inigo, Brendan, Chris, James, and Matt. Also, shout out to @ForceOfPhil, the creator of the song Garfussy. If you have not checked him out on SoundCloud, well, what are you waiting for? Check it out. It's got some good Magic-related rap music, which I think is pretty sweet. Think like MTG Remy, but like better, yeah? And then also, you know, he edits our stuff. So anybody who is working on the Patreon, you guys are helping make us not sound like monkeys. And then, why does it say that we're skipping upcoming content, Bob?
Well, do you have any upcoming content?
Yikes! Next one, caster updates. Bob, how's your life been?
I'm doing all right. I mean, I've been putting out the legacy metagame stuff. I might put up a guide to Blastoise pay to win Stompy, blue white pay to win Blastoise Stompy, I should say. So yeah, maybe I'll put something out there. We'll see. Other than that, you know, came back from a nice weekend of playing Paper Magic at SCG Philly. You were kind enough to scrub out, so then I was on camera for most of the day for Sunday. So that was a good time. And then I also have been doing really well in Modo, playing Kappa Cannon here. So we can definitely talk about that too.
Okay. Voke, what about you? You're in Charlottesville, Virginia, but I feel like you jump around a lot of the time, like to a lot of different places, right?
Yeah. So I'm in grad school, PA school, and I finished my last rotation the day before Philly. So I drove from Bristol, Virginia to Charlottesville, which is like a 4-hour drive, and then drove to Richmond, and Daniel D'Amato drove us up for Philly. And then I've been in Charlottesville, Virginia since then, doing a family medicine rotation.
Ooh, okay. That sounds very fancy. I don't know. Okay. All right. Anytime I hear anyone doing anything like medicine related, anything, just like study work, prep work, my wife has like she finished it like a couple years ago or whatever. And I'm just like, that shit is like hard. I mean, I couldn't even get through my 9th grade biology book. I got 2-0'd in 9th grade by this thick ass book. It was like 600 pages. And then when I told that to my wife, like when she was in med school, she's like, yeah, we go through like one of those in a week. And I was just like, oh, okay. Yeah, this is definitely not for me. I'd much rather just like spitball the mic here on a podcast instead. But yeah, that's super sweet. How'd you do at Philly?
So I 7-2'd modern. I think I misplayed a few times and probably could have 8-1 with better play. And then Sunday, I lost round one, won 5 in a row, and then lost the next round. So I was 5-2, and then I dropped so that we could go home earlier. So I could have played it out for $100 for 2 rounds, but I just wanted to go home and get to bed before 2 a.m. So
quite the power play, 5-2 drop. You don't really see it that often. But what were you playing in both formats, Modern and Legacy?
Yeah, so Modern, I was playing Grixis Shadow. I think it's one of the top 3 decks in the format, and I have the cards for it. Like, I don't have $3,000 to play Money Pile, and Hammer is pretty hard to play, so I played similar decks in the past and it's well positioned. For Legacy, I played Blue Red Delver. I think it's the best deck for an open meta that you expect in paper.
Okay, all right. And I know this past weekend too, you also had a pretty solid finish in the Mana Traders Legacy $15,000 event.
Yeah, so I played Blue Red Delver again, a slightly different list from what I used to qualify for that. But I was 6-1 in the Swiss, and then Rodrigo scooped me into top 8 because he was 7-0. So I got into top 8, won my quarterfinals match, and then lost the semifinals. And it was kind of a weird structure for their event. I lost the loser's bracket match after that. We were only playing for one qualifier point. It was the same amount of money in the loser's bracket. So it's like $1,000 plus the loyalty multiplier, and I've had mana traders for 49 months. So that's like an extra $400 from giving them money for so long.
How does the loyalty multiplier work? Is it like go on forever, or like
the number of months you have minus 2 times 0.1, or it's some weird formula.
So basically, like let's say the year's like 2,900 or something like that. Do you get like $1 billion if you top 8 the mana traders event?
Hypothetically.
Bro, do you believe in immortality, bro?
Hey, don't worry about that part, dude. I'm just trying to see if I can get that bag, okay? Like that's what my eyes are on the prize, okay? That's what I'm saying. But yeah, okay, that's awesome. Last I talked, I was trying to buy a house in San Francisco. I have since then realized that is not sustainable because the housing prices in the Bay Area are absolutely insane. So, you know, F's in the chat for my homeowning perspectives. Maybe like in a year or two, I don't know. Or maybe, I don't know, we'll see what happens. But then, yeah, also I went to SCG Philly as well with the boys. And we literally roomed together, the three of us, Voke, Bob, and I. And that's where I got to do my potato cam guerrilla coverage, which if you haven't already watched it, well, it's awkward because Twitch randomly just deleted all my VODs, including VODs of that event. So I had to scramble together what I could find, and I'm still in the process of repairing and putting together the bits and pieces of paper magic coverage. Dude, I am so upset that actually happened. So like I feel really passionate about doing like paper coverage. I know SCG Indy is coming up here. I helped with commentary on the NRG event just this weekend. I think it was Modern in... Was it Milwaukee? I don't know where it was. Wherever it was. Milwaukee, I think. Yeah. I'm super passionate about like that kind of coverage. I think it's just such a shame that, you know, we cannot watch like some of the most important magic happening, or rather that support for covering is going down. So I mean, it's like one of those things where you just have to put it in your own hands. I know like Meebo is doing a great job at showing their side of the story as well. I think in between rounds and like all that sort of stuff. I know we got to see like star players like Brian Koval, Harlan Ferrer, like etc. And then also like we made it into SCG Con Jarvis Yu and SCG Con Bob Wong, which I thought was a really sweet idea. The Grand Prix Reed Duke style events I think are really awesome, although hopefully in the future we get a little bit more accessibility into covering matches from Star City Games. I had a lot of restrictions. So for what it's worth, for anyone who doesn't know, the casino at Valley Forge has a basement, and that's where they throw all the Magic players to play in their events, right? And it's miserable because, well, naturally, when you're underground in a basement, you have no reception. So I had to pay out of pocket like a lot of money to get an Ethernet connection, which I then used to connect my device to the universe. And it was a sizable investment. But again, like I'm just so passionate about it. Like I'd probably do it again for Indy and things like that as well, just to make sure that we have stable connections and things like that. Although Indy probably will be a better situation. We'll see. We'll see. Right. And so that's why earlier when I flashed my phone swag on the screen, I have the S22 Ultra. I don't know if there are any phone geeks in here, but the S22 Ultra, I got my case and I got my screen protector for it. And hopefully I'll actually get the phone on Friday. But ideally, I would have a better camera now to get a little bit higher resolution video. I don't really know too much about the details, but I'm like way overdue for an upgrade anyway, so whatever. Okay, you guys want to talk about magic?
If we have to. That sounds nice that you got a new phone though. I thought the quality was pretty good this weekend though, for, you know, for what we had.
Yeah, I think so too, but I'd like things to be better. Like actually it's kind of crazy because I brought like my fancy camera. It was like a $500 like camera that has like a SDI output and blah 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 blah. And I brought all the gear to set it up. And then when I showed it to the people at Star City, they were like, this is really good, but unfortunately, like, we just don't have like the space for you this time around. And so now that I've shown them what I can do, by the way, Jared Silva is an absolute beast. Like he was so helpful over the weekend. Like literally, like I could not have done what I did without his help. And so I'm extremely grateful. If you ever see Jared Silva in the streets, anybody who is listening to this, anybody who's in the chat, give that man a hug. He earned it. He deserves it. He works really hard. Okay. So we posted a bunch of questions to Twitter at Elo Punters, I think, right? It's not at Eternal Glory Podcast. Okay. Yeah. At Elo Punters. And Matt, you got a lot of fans out there.
There's a lot of loam related questions, which is like, I think that is a very key feature of Legacy. Is like people really like their decks that they've been playing for, you know, a long time. And so some people even felt a little bit betrayed by the fact that Matt's playing Delver now. But yeah, let's dive into some of these. So How do you see four color loam decks nowadays versus 3 to 4 years ago? Is lands in its various forms simply the better loam deck now? So let's start there, and then there's a whole bunch of follow up questions to that too, but let's start there.
Yeah, so I think a lot of the main pivotal cards in four color loam, however many years ago, just haven't aged well. So Chalice is so much worse than it used to be. There's Prismatic Ending, Murktide can just race you if you're dirtling. Karn can kill it. So Chalice is a lot worse. Liliana the Veil is a lot worse against Karn, against Thopter tokens from 8 cast. Doomsday, they just need one card to win. They're not like a critical mass deck like Storm used to be. So a lot of your key cards just aren't good anymore, and you don't have a replacement like Oko to fill a similar spot. I think the like successor to Loam at this point is probably Green-White Depths or something similar to it, where you're like a controlling deck that has favorable fair matchups and you're unfavored against the combo decks of the format. So I think Green-White Depths is more of a analogous deck than lands is. I think lands, that was also a deck 4 years ago. It's a lot higher variance. You have some more powerful draws, but your floor is also a lot lower. And you don't have cards like Abrupt Decay to have main deck interaction against Blood Moon or opposing lock pieces. I personally don't like lands that much just because it's so inconsistent, and I feel like cards like Knight of the Reliquary and Elvish Reclaimer, Green Sun Zenith, those are all really important at just either winning the game directly or just increasing your consistency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lands definitely is more of a prison strategy, and obviously we know that, as you were saying, like these new cards printed since 2019, like they win the game by themselves, so prison has become less viable lately. So this is kind of another lead-in, final lead-in. All these questions, are from at B Takahira on Twitter. So what's made you a blue mage more recently?
So I started buying into the blue cards in paper, I think, end of Deathrite Shaman era. I wanted to own that deck in paper too, and I started playing it online. I played Checkpile, maybe like one or two challenges.
All right, so that's like 2018.
Yeah, and then I played Grixis Control a lot in 2018. I would always play Loam for paper events or big online events, but I like playing the Grixis Control deck a lot. And then when Renin 6 came out before then with Dreadhorde Arcanist 2, like, I don't know. I've just always liked playing the blue cards too. I like all the different flavors of Legacy, all the fair decks. So I feel like I've kind of always been a blue mage in certain respects. And then since COVID started, I've had a lot more time to play online, and the blue decks are just above and beyond the best thing to be doing. You have so much consistency, and all the new cards that they keep printing just slot right into the blue deck. So if you want to win the most, those are probably the decks you should be playing.
Nice. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I know we also talked briefly, and this is kind of true for me as well. It's like when I first got into Legacy, like the very first deck that I bought was Affinity, and then later on I ended up getting Show and Tell, and then later on after that I started playing Delver. And I always had like this fear of playing Delver and Fair Brainstorm decks. I was always like, ooh, that card is really skill testing. It's really hard to play. Like, maybe I'm not good enough for it. But then once I started actually playing it, it's like, no, this card is like not that complicated. You basically wait until you have two bad cards in your hand, then you turn it into an Ancestral Recall. It's just like that busted. So I know you probably came to like a similar realization.
Hey man, I find that kind of complicated, dude. I think that's pretty hard.
When I first got into Legacy, that was kind of my opinion too, that I thought Brainstorm was hard to cast, so I just started playing Punishing Jund at our proxy events, and then learned that Loam was just the better version of that deck, so that's what I started off with and just stuck with it for a while.
Yeah, okay, cool. Some more questions that are somewhat Loam related. At Dugs on Twitch, would love to know your thoughts on Slogurk the Overslime, and if there's any room for competitive like bug Loam/lands list. Or if it's missing something specific right now.
I like generally knew what it did, but I wanted to see the exact text on it. Can you pull it up?
Yeah, so this is a one blue and a green Life from the Loam equivalent. It has trample, it's a 3/3, it's an ooze if that's, your thing. Whenever a land is put into your graveyard from anywhere, put a +1 counter on it, remove 3 counters to bounce it, and then when it leaves play, put 3 lands from your graveyard to your hand.
Yeah, so just looking at it right away, I feel like it's kind of too inefficient for the format. It's probably going to get Karakas before you can get 3 lands. And against Delver, they might just Pyroblast it. I feel like it's just too slow. If this was a card in like 2018, maybe it would have been playable. but overall you'd rather just have another Uro or Endurance or something. Overall, with like a Bug Loam Shell, I feel like you're really pulled into white by Prismatic Ending and Swords to Plowshares, so at that point you'd probably want to be four color, but then you can't play the Depths combo, you can't really play Urza Saga. I just feel like those color combinations, they just don't offer much compared to like green white X.
I do think that Prismatic Ending and Endurance are like a very special pillar of the format, and anytime you are trying to play anything that is like unreasonably costed, and when I say unreasonably costed, I mean like, yes, three mana or higher, because this is Legacy and this is just like, these are the constraints that we have, you have to ask yourself, like, is this better than just like Uro, Endurance, like any of these like piles, these wet noodle piles? And even in the like non-control decks, I do think like your other cards like Knight of the Reliquary, or like, you only have so many slots you can spend on three mana cards, right? And Loam might just even be better just by virtue of being one mana cheaper. But then this card is really cool in theory, but when it boils down to it, like the fun police will just be like, you don't get to play this card because we'll pyroblast it. Like Voke mentioned, like before you can even get three lands into play or bounce it or whatever it is. I did have the misfortune of letting my opponent wasteland me first before plowing a Slowgurk. I didn't realize that if you killed it with removal that it would just, I didn't read the card basically, and then when it actually got back like a second wasteland, I was like, oh shit, this is not a good time. But I think like once people's like, this is a card that is very easy to play around, and it's also really chunky, so it's like you could just get tempoed out playing it. It's got trample, which is nice though.
I do want to call out, people are still playing kind of Loam variants in the Saturday challenge. I faced a Lincoln 3 and they got 29th place with a four color Loam list that had blue, so every color except for red, and it was also playing Force of Will, so it's kind of a mix between a classic Loam deck. It does play Mox Diamond, it does play Life from the Loam, but it also plays Brainstorm and Force of Will, so it's kind of a like a Bug Loam control deck, which is always kind of interesting. I always found it was very difficult for these decks to build, because if you're playing Mox Diamond, you need like at least 25 lands. If you're playing Force of Will, you need at least 18 blue cards. So it was just very difficult to figure out, you know, what 18 blue cards were worth playing on a Loam shell. So I never could really figure it out. But it looks like some people are still out there experimenting with this kind of list. So it's kind of a classic Uro list, but the difference is that it has Mox Diamond for some acceleration. And it's also playing Dam, which I thought was pretty powerful. That's like the new card that's like two black to destroy a creature, but then if you pay four, you get a Wrath of God. And fun fact about Wrath of God is that basically you can't regenerate the creatures either. So I was playing Kappa Cannoneer, and so even if I had something like a Welding Jar, it would not be effective against Dam.
Side note, massive shout out to Todd Anderson. Thank you for the big raid. Much appreciated. We're recording a podcast today. My name is Anurag Das. I'm here with Bob Wong and special guest Ozymandias, a.k.a. Matthew Voke. You've probably seen his results all over Magic Online. We're going to talk about something new now as everyone comes in here. Let's talk about Legacy with the new set, Neon Dynasty.
Yeah, let's do it. So I did look through basically recent leagues and then the last two challenges to kind of call out all of the new cards from the set. So obviously there's some of the cards that everybody's been talking about. There's Boseiju, the Channel Lands, Otawara, and Agonjo. All three of those are seeing play. But then there's also some like crazy stuff going on too. Like this card, when I first read it, I just completely dismissed it.
What card?
Shurikai Genesis Engine, which I think is probably a play on
okay.
That anime.
All right. Relax, Bob. There's no way this is actually a good card. You know, like, I feel like, okay, so I can already tell you, I was watching MoPanda stream this deck. It's just like regular Jeskai control, but for some reason, it just has like an Autobot in the deck as like a 3 or 4X in it. This is an 8/8 that like draws two cards, discards a card. But like if Slowgurk is not a playable card, Shurikai Genesis Engines, those two white and a blue for a vehicle. It's a legendary card. You can spend one and then tap it to draw two cards and then discard a card. And you make a 1/1 that can crew as if it was like a 3/1, I think. Something like that, right? Also, it can be your commander. What the flaming fuck is this? How did this actually 5-0 in Legacy?
Oh, okay, hold
I do
on,
not
hold
understand.
On. So is Coercive Portal playable? All right, well,
no.
Then this is probably not playable.
was that a trick question? Well, Bob was like, rubbing my hands together.
Coercive Portal a lot, but it's just not quite there. But this is similar enough to that. where, you know, every turn you're drawing three cards and discarding one card. So if this card sticks around, you are having an insane amount of value, and you will quickly kind of bury your opponents in card advantage and card selection. That being said, obviously it has, you know, the major drawback of costing four mana and then being blue, so it can be pyroblasted.
Yeah, I'm literally laughing in Pyroblast right now. Like, there's no shot this card is playable. All right, dude, that you're crossing the line here, man. Come on. Why you gotta be like that? I think there was like an equivalent to Reckoner Bankbuster. That sounds a lot like this thing, Shorikai, as well. What is this? This is two mana only. So this is colorless, two mana, 4/4. And oh, basically it's like one of those, what is that? It was a standard card that you could like remove a counter to draw a card. You spent like two mana for it, except this does the same thing, but you have to make like a creature. Something about like making creatures and then they can crew as if they were like two power greater. Very confusing Oracle deck. Well, not very confusing. It's just like wordy text. I don't really like that, but whatever. This thing also draws cards. It's slow too.
It's
I
just
just
another
don't know
slow
what
way
this
to
card
draw
doing.
cards. Jarvis compared it to Maze Mind Tome, which is like
That's what I was thinking
not
of, yeah.
super playable, but sometimes Eldrazi Post plays it. So this is similar to that. It's a little bit more aggressive slanting since you can crew it. So, you know, I could see it in an Eldrazi Post deck with Mana Reshaper, but it's not going to be a huge deal breaker. So, all right, yeah. So let's cut the crap. We can get to some of the more powerful cards that I think that we did suspect. So, first card I want to talk about is Hetetsugu Consumes All. So I thought this card was good and powerful. The problem is that it's in the worst colors possibly in Legacy, which is black and red. So it's Hetetsugu Consumes All. One, a black and a red, 3 mana for a saga that the front side is you first saga is you destroy each non-land permanent with mana value 1 or less, 2, exile all graveyards, and then 3, you flip it and it comes back as a 3/3 non-legendary creature, which is confusing because Hetetsugu is obviously a legend, but it's a 3/3 trample. Whenever it deals damage, put a +1/+1 counter on it. Whenever it deals damage to a player, if it has dealt 10 or more damage to that player this turn, they lose the game. So basically,
They're bringing Commander to my constructed formats. Get me out! No, I'm kidding. Commander's kind of sweet. But yeah, this card is insane, dude. I don't know how you thought this was only good. Like, this card, actually, I've seen as a 4X in all the Grixis decks that are winning, or that 5-0'd or whatever. The first ability is so good. It's just so good.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like an EE on one, but it also deals with zeros as well, and it like continues to accrue value. So it's not just, you know, the EE on one. It's like you get an EE on one, but then you also get something that's relevant after that.
Yeah, like any Urza Saga target that gets tutored up, like Mox Opal or like Mox Opal or I don't know, whatever Urza Saga targets there. It's really good against Urza Saga. That's why I really like this card. Urza Saga literally defines Legacy right now. So having a sweeper that is good against like, oh, turn one Delver, turn two Darcy, Darcy, and then turn three Delver, 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 which is what I lost to at Philly, by the way, not salty. Like the fact that this is good against that, but then also good against like the second pillar, Urza Saga, makes this card really good. And then it flips into a 3/3 that literally kills your opponent in, I think, two attacks, right? Two attacks?
No, I think it only,
Whatever. I
yeah,
can't
it's
math.
10
Math was
damage
never my
this
strong
turn,
suit, dude.
so I think that's probably basically flavor text. Like, maybe if it added up like poison, then that would be kind of interesting.
Oh, this turn. Okay, that's a lot less cool then. My bad. I completely misread this card. I was like, oh, if you could just attack three times and then it's GG, like, that'd be insane, but.
Yeah, but the problem with this card you already alluded to was that basically, you know, if you're playing control, you want white for plow and ending or green for Uro and endurance, and black and red are neither of those colors. So you're basically either playing a three color deck or you're playing a four color deck and sacrificing one of those two.
Yeah, news at 9, black and white are not blue and white. Okay, sorry, black and red are not. Damn it, I fucked up my joke. All right, well, either way, I still think this is kind of cool because it's like an engineered explosives that then like poops out a 3/3. And the one thing that I've realized in Legacy playing control is that we have slowly come to the age where you are just not allowed to not have creatures that go to the board, right? Like we saw it with like Icewing Quaddle and like Baleful Strix. That was the first iteration. Nowadays we see a lot of endurances, but I think this kind of card is exactly what you want in control because it is a removal spell that generates more value as a creature, which is something that, like, you know, 2013 Underdog would just be like, wow, what the hell is going on here? I mean, I don't know, there's just like so much value in this card. Getting to the board is kind of relevant because like racing and like, you know, countering the aggression and like playing that sort of game, I feel like it's necessary in Legacy nowadays. What do you think, Vogue?
The card's okay. I think it's probably slightly better than Kaya, the 3 mana Kaya, but even that doesn't see much play. I feel like it also just gets dazed against Delver. So, I don't know. That's true of a lot of cards. I could see it in Grixis if that becomes like a tier 2, tier 3 deck. Yeah, this isn't like earth-shattering or anything, but it's definitely relevant against the Saga decks. Can hit like Aether Vial, Mother of Runes, or kill like two Dragon's Rage Channelers, then delay them off of Murktide for a few turns. So
okay, that's a pretty base response, I'm not gonna lie. It's just like, I mean, honestly, like if I had to be super serious, I feel like your takes in general have been very, how do I explain this? Pretty conservative takes. You know what I mean? Like everything you've said so far makes me feel like you're the kind of player that like plays very mechanically well and you have like good fundamentals. So maybe like the Timmy and me looking at this card and being like, die, Delver, die. Meanwhile, you're just like, you know, it's three mana, just gonna get dazed. Like, I guess that's very real, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Is it better or worse than Plague Engineer? I guess. Like Exiling Graveyard is probably the unique point. Yeah.
Well, no, I think killing Saga tokens is huge.
Yeah.
You know, that's the card, that's what really brings me to it. But yeah. We got a lot of other cards here. Bob, can I talk to you about my favorite card on this list? Can I get a shout out to my boy Twinshot Sniper? I have seen nothing but cool things. So Twinshot Sniper is a goblin. I think it's also an archer. It's got reach. It's a 2/3. When it ETBs, it has a little bit of a Flame Tongue Khavu effect. Deals 2 damage to any target. I was just talking earlier about how I feel like with Legacy, you need to start playing to the board more. And this card gives me like kind of endurance vibes, if you will. It's a, you know, like it's a body that's relevant, but then also it has like an auxiliary effect. So spending 4 mana to put it into play is not perfect, obviously. But what really makes this card good is channeling it for 1 and a red, which you can then discard the Twinshot Sniper and it deals 2 damage to any target. So basically, if you have consumed any Goblins content, you know, like patreon.com/goblinlackey1, I'm sure that'll get you somewhere. But Eli must be like drooling over this card because it is like an uncounterable sudden shock that you can tutor. And yeah, I think it's absurd. Like, I don't know if this will necessarily bring like, you know, mono red back into the fray, but the fact that you have this modal effect that is 2 mana for an uncounterable removal spell against Delver, but that also can, in the late game, you can cavern it out, or you could just, you know, play it, you know, with whatever mana you have, and then it's a 2/3 that can block a Delver while also killing something else. I think that's kind of insane. I know, like, you know, in the grand scheme of things, maybe not many people will get hyped up about like, oh, new Goblins tech, but the design of this card is what really makes me happy as a control player, because it's like a kill spell that also has something else to it. Kind of like Baleful Strix, but likely better.
I just found out that it has reach.
Yeah, I found that out recently too, and I was like, oh wait, that is a game changer, because I think if it doesn't have that keyword on it, it becomes a lot worse. But it does, so it's not worse.
Yeah, there was a 3-1 list from a prelim, or maybe it was a 5-0 list a few days ago that was like, it was the more aggressively slanted Goblins deck of like Chromox, kind of like a red prison deck with all the 8 rabbles, but also playing like more goblin specific cards. And I think this is a pretty good card for that shell, just with Ancient Tomb and whatnot.
I see Min saying that it's worse than Munitions Expert and Gem Palm. I don't know if it's worse than Gem Palm necessarily. I guess that would be the competitor, but like, I think the real cards that I would it's never going to replace Munitions Expert. I think that much we know for sure. Maybe it's worse than Gem Palm, but I don't know. Gem Palm has its ups and downs too. Gem Palm does cycle. I think this is like, wait, so Eli is telling me it's a solid 2 of that has a lot of utility across the format, which, oh, you were making fun of that statement. Okay, never mind, man. I take back. Whatever. Eli has given this the thumbs up of approval, so buy your Twinshot Snipers now, because the Goblin God himself, the Gremlin Ghoul, the Gremlin, wait, no, that's not, that doesn't make sense. That alliteration doesn't work. Okay, whatever, you get it. Buy them now, they're good, tested and true. I'm happy.
No, I was just going to say, I think Wizards has gone, you know, a lot further recently printing these modal cards. So, like, if you look on it, either side of this card, like, neither side is playable, but both sides are, like, decent. So that's what makes it kind of a playable card. And I think that's, like, an interesting way of design by printing these like extra modes on cards, and that makes them Legacy playable rather than like making them super undercosted. So that's a lot safer way of kind of making cards playable rather than you know pushing the boundaries.
Although, can I be honest, I feel like they're doing that with literally everything. Okay, maybe I'm just gonna go a little bit of a rant here, but I spoke with Daryl Ayers, who's a pretty smart guy, And I had a really interesting question that came up, which was like Baseju, right? And like Otawara, like these are really powerful cards, but at what point, like, okay, so one thing that I really do like about these cards is having your lands like do stuff besides just tapping mana, right? Because the worst thing in Magic, I think, like on like an equivalent like Hearthstone or whatever, is there are games where you don't either get to play because you don't have mana, or you don't get to play because you have too much mana, right? And so in the latter situation, I think these sort of like multimodal lands are really cool because, you know, your lands are suddenly becoming spells. Now, what Daryl actually said that was really interesting to me was, I think we're at the point where we just have too many of these effects, right? Like, let's see, like Urza Saga is a big one. We have spell lands already in the format in the form of like Wasteland, and now you're introducing like Baseju, Eganjo, you know, Otawara. And at some point, it's just like you might just have so many of these land spells, the multi, like, you know, these like dual do everything kind of cards, that you actually have to start cutting your actual spells that you're like, oh yeah, you know, like, I don't think I'm gonna cut, like, I don't know, like the fourth copy of Uro, or like the second Jace, or like, I don't know what Delver players would cut. Delver players don't cut anything, actually, you know, like, to make space for these kinds of cards. And I just feel like there's too many. Maybe this is, I think it's a good idea in moderation, but then when you have like only cards that do two things, ugh, there's just like a lot of like power creep really hits you hard when you think about it that way. You know what I mean?
I think it's just going to lead to lower variance. So better players are going to win more.
I don't know. I feel like it's like lazy design if everything does at least two things, you know. It's cool, but it's also just like a lot. I don't know. That's just my personal take on it. Like, I think we just need to, like, it's cool to have some of these cards, but I don't want everything to be like this. You know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, like, if every card is a banger, then I think we're just playing like Yu-Gi-Oh at that point, right? Where, like, you just need one card to win the game or something like that. So that's just my thought. We can move on to the next card here, which is like probably the meat and potatoes of today's discussion, which is this Pokemon. Do you guys get it? Do you guys get the reference? Kappa Cannoneer, go! Blastoise. Okay, all right, Bob, you've been playing a lot of this deck. Talk to me about Kappa Cannoneer, the card, like what it does, and then like how you decided to play it. Like, talk to me about your thought process too and looking into it. And then I know you've shown me, we've talked a lot about this, you've shown me like 7 different deck lists, so maybe like walk me through the process behind it. And then after that, Voke, I want you to take everything that he says and just like rip it apart to shreds.
Wow, you have to like... you know, make that announcement ahead of time, so now I know what I'm in for. But yeah, I've been playing this card. If you want to really describe this card, I mean, it's basically Blastoise. It's a turtle with a giant cannon on its back, which is pretty freaking badass. But in terms of what it actually does, it's like True Name Nemesis and Murktide Regent had an unholy baby. I think most people know what the card does by now, but basically it's 5 and a blue, 6 mana, improvise, so your artifacts can tap to pay for the colorless. Ward 4, which is, you know, it's basically hexproof unless your opponent pays 4, which obviously is a really tall order in Legacy. You're able to kind of get the Cannoneer down on turn 2, sometimes turn 1, probably more commonly turn 3. But that means that, you know, they're at least like 2 or 3 turns away from, you know, trying to plow or pyroblast it. And that's if they hit every single land drop. So basically it's a kind of a tall order to kill this card. So in that sense, it's like True Name Nemesis. And then there's also the fact that, when an artifact enters the battlefield, under your control, you put a +1/+1 counter and it can't be blocked. So like True Name Nemesis, it cannot be blocked. And like Murktide Regent, it grows to be very big. Like, I've routinely had these grow to be like 10/10s on like the turn that I untap with it. So yeah, it is like an unholy marriage of two of kind of the most frustrating cards in Legacy. But at least thankfully it doesn't go into like Delver. It goes into, you know, artifact decks. All right, so then in terms of my process with this card, when I first saw it, I was like, okay, Improvise is a lot worse than Affinity. So it actually is going to take some work to get into play, and that's why it's more of a turn 3 card rather than like a turn 2 card. But it's so powerful that, you know, against any slower deck, it's just going to take over the game and end the game because it's so hard to interact with. So I first started playing it in kind of a more aggressive mono blue shell with Patchwork Automaton. But then I figured out that like that card just like does work, but you have to be hyper aggressive. And I'd rather like not do that. I'd rather still have some other game. The real problem with this card is it's not that good against Delver, because Delver can typically race it with, you know, Dragon's Reach Channeler, Delver, and Murktide Regent. And so what I was finding is, like, how do you make this card kind of work better against Delver? At first, I was cutting Thought Monitors to fit this in, but then I realized you really needed the Thought Monitor-Emery interaction to beat Delver a lot of the time. So then finally, I tried it in blue-white with Esper Sentinel. And then the other thing is this card also can be countered on the stack, so it is somewhat weak to Daze and Pyroblast. And so then when I added the white, later on I also ended up adding Cavern of Souls. Most of the creatures in the deck are humans. Emery is not, Cannoneer is not, Thought Monitor is not, but everything else is. So basically I ended up adding more lands to the deck, so I'm playing 17 lands in addition to Cavern of Souls, and then that also helps to figure out the kind of counterability issue of this card. And so since I built the deck, I've been kind of on a heater. I am 43 and 12 at the deck, and it does feel extremely powerful. But that being said, I do think it can be hated out. It's kind of like, you know, when 8-cast was first becoming a deck, I was just crushing people. Like, the blue control decks could just not keep up with my raw card advantage.
Stop. Did you say 43-12?
Yes.
That's like an 80% win rate, my
dude.
Yeah,
it is very, very good.
What the fuck?
That being said, like I was getting to it. So it can be hated out. Like, there are cards out there that, you know, deal with this card. Most notably, there's Seeds of Innocence. There is Serenity. Both of those do not allow the creature to be regenerated. So even if I were to, like, try something like Welding Jar, that wouldn't work. Obviously, people are also playing cards more like Supreme Verdict. And so there are ways of kind of answering this card. And then there are other ways of, like, you know, stopping this card before it ever gets down. Obviously, there's Chalice on Zero, which is good against this deck. But there's also Lavinia. So I was talking to Jeff Lynn, the creator of Esper Vile. He's like, yeah, I might play more of those cards to kind of get under the Cannoneer. Or there's also kind of Kataki, War's Wage. So that's another tool that, you know, Death and Taxes and Esper Vile can play. And obviously, all the blue decks, you know, they have access to Meltdown. They could also play Pulverize. Which is another free way to destroy all artifacts, and that's a way to get at the Cannoneer, whereas Meltdown probably wouldn't. So there are plenty of hate cards out there that people can play to kind of deal with this card, and I think people need to start kind of respecting it soon if it keeps winning. However, I will also say the card is currently 100 tickets on Magic Online, and so there really aren't that many people playing it right now. I think eventually it should come down in price because the supply is coming out in chests and it should grow. So I think once this becomes, say, a $50 card, we might see this deck kind of take off more, and then it makes sense to play the hate to beat it.
Could I add one thing about a twin shot sniper? So when I play Loam, if you're on the draw, a lot of the times your mulligan decisions were thinking about, do I have a Mox Diamond or do I have an Abrupt Decay? Because you either catch up on mana on the draw or have an uncounterable way to kill Delver. And the curve of the red prison decks right now is either, like, just all three drops. So if they wasteland your Ancient Tomb or some part of your draw doesn't come together, you're, like, time walked for two turns. So having an uncounterable way to kill Delver or a DRC is really big. So I think Twinshot Sniper is actually probably going to be a pretty big card for, like, red prison or, like, a red prison goblins hybrid. So it's kind of like an Abrupt Decay in a sense for turn two, and like slots nicely into your curve. For Kappa Cannoneer, one of the big problems with 8-cast before was that, like, you just draw all these cards, and then the cards you're drawing are artifacts, and then you put them into play, and then your opponent plays Meltdown, and they completely undo everything that you did. It's kind of like if you're playing Elves, and you're just glimpse comboing, and then your opponent just plays Terminus.
That's my jam, baby! Sorry, I had to interject. That was great.
8-cast had the problem with Thought Monitor that you're just drawing more cards, they come to play, and then they die from Meltdown, and then you just die to a Murktide or whatever. Kappa Cannoneer is like a way to convert card advantage into just winning the game directly. I really like that, especially against Hull Breacher, Narset, things like that. Bob's list, I think he cut the Thought Cast for Kappa Cannoneer, sort of. So I think that's a good trade-off. And then playing less Thought Monitor because you can only play so many payoff spells in 8-cast. every time there's a like really expensive artifact card, there was one in the recent set, it was like 7 mana dig through time for artifacts,
Reality Heist. Yeah,
every time there's some card like that, people think it slots into 8-cast, but the issue with the deck in my experience, I haven't played it in a few months, but was you're just light on enablers a lot of the time. So like you're looking at a hand that's a bunch of Thought Monitors, but you didn't have all of the early enablers for it. So you can only play so many payoffs.
Yeah. I think a key moment in building this deck was when I realized I could cut Thoughtcast. Like, it kind of seemed crazy to me because that was like the one affinity card that's been in the deck since all time. But then it was just, I was realizing that, you couldn't play too many payoff cards. And then if you did want to play payoff, Thought Monitor was a bit better because of the Emery synergy against Delver. There's also just the fact that everybody's playing, like every single control deck has, you know, Narset or Hull Breacher, Death and Taxes of Spirit of the Labyrinth. So it actually is kind of a liability, even though it is, you know, pretty strong against Delver to just kind of go up in cars and play through days. But that is kind of the one deck building concession I had to make.
It's also good with Torpor Orb in that Thoughtcast would shut off the, sorry, Torpor Orb would shut off the Thought Monitor before, but now, looking at Bob's list, I think Torpor Orb doesn't shut off anything in his list, except for the 2 Thought Monitor.
Yeah, it shuts off 2 Thought Monitor and the Emery trigger, but yeah, usually by that point, it doesn't super matter. Also, Torpor Orb is such a haymaker that, like, you know, Death and Taxes and Doomsday are so far behind when you have it out that it's totally fine.
Actually, there's one more interaction that I think is super cool that I did not realize, but Torpor Orb does mess around with Caput Cannoneer as well, just a little bit. If you think about it, your eyes will go like, whoa. I was playing yesterday on the stream, and I put Torpor Orb into play against D&T on turn 2, and then I played Caput Cannoneer on, sorry, turn 1, and then I played the Blastoise on turn 2. It did not get the +1/+1 counter, and then also when I made Urza Saga Constructs, it did not get the +1/+1 counter, which is kind of a weird thing to think about, but like when you think about it, you're like, oh, okay. But it could come up in racing. Very small thing.
You had Torpor Orb and Blastoise out against D&T. They were not winning that game.
It's actually crazy that you say that, because I think I could have almost lost. I don't know. Council's Judgment is a very playable card in D&T that makes me not very happy.
Yep, that's another card that answers this.
Okay. I do want to ask you about the White Splash, though, because I know you were pretty high on that, and you've even said multiple times that the White Splash is the truth. So what does the White Splash include, and why is it actually, like, a good thing?
So there's Aethersworn Canonist, which is powerful, because once you have that in play, it means you basically have control of the stack. Like, anytime, you know, your opponent tries to play a spell, if you force it, they don't get to force back, assuming they're not trying to resolve an artifact, which most of the time they're not. So that's powerful, but the real kind of money card, if you will, is Esper Sentinel. Like, that card is just drawn me, like, so many cards. Either your opponent chooses not to play Magic, or you choose to draw, like, 3+ cards over the course of the game, and that's just broken for 1 mana. There's also the fact that, like, I'm still able to play Chalice with it because I have Cavern of Souls in the deck, so there are a lot of times when I'm happily casting my 1-drop through a Cavern and through a Chalice on 1, so that's always a, kind of a nice, fun little interaction. But yeah, basically Esper Sentinel is an insane card against Delver, and even against decks like Death and Taxes, it doesn't look very impressive, but it does hamper what they're trying to do, which is, you know, answer your cards most of the time. So it's good against almost every deck in the format.
It's also another card for Caput Cannoneer Improvise, and it's kind of like a Mother of Runes for Emery and Psy, and that they have to kill it first some percentage of the time.
And it always trades up on mana, like, I mean, unless you have like Gutshot or something, but basically all the time, you know, you're either getting ahead on cards or ahead on mana when they deal with it.
Also, I mean, shout out to your boy Swords to Plowshares in the sideboard of this deck. If people want to find this deck list, it's probably on MTG Goldfish, because you did play it this weekend in the Legacy Challenge, right,
yep.
Bob?
Yeah, I played it. I top 4 the Saturday Challenge and then went 5-2 in the Sunday Challenge. So yeah, it's been doing very well for me. That being said, you know, I see the warning signs there. Like, there are cards that I am consistently losing to. And I think once people start playing those cards, you know, this deck will be another fine deck, but it's not going to be, you know, where I feel like it's kind of tier 1 right now.
Yeah. Glacial Chasm is one that I'm pretty, pretty afraid of, because this deck basically has no way to deal with that. I'm wondering if there's, like, are there cards that you could play to handle lands? I don't know. Like, I mean, in Modern, for example, you have things, weird things like Spreading Seas, but I don't think there's, like, a playable artifact legacy equivalent that you could run in this deck, right?
Yeah, I mean that I think that is definitely one weakness is 12 post and Glacial Chasm. So that if that deck gets more popular, this deck can have a hard time pushing through. In the other eight cast deck, I was playing Karns, which is a really nice way to answer lands, but Karn is bad against Delver and so is Kappa Cannoneer, so it doesn't really make sense to play the two of them together. So yeah, I mean there are probably fringe E cards that you could try if those decks become more popular. But yeah, I can't think of any like super good ones right now. Like I've kind of wanted to play Sabo's Web for some time, but that doesn't even deal with Glacial Chasm. So yeah, I'm not totally sure. Like Karn just seems like the best one by far, but like I mentioned, I probably don't want to play it.
Respect to the OGs right there, Sabo's Web. That was like the original answer to like Wishadon port, right? Way back when.
Yes, very way back when.
Cool. All right, cool. Well, I think this deck is pretty sweet. I don't think everyone's gonna be playing it because it's like just ungodly expensive right now. It's like literally pay to win because it's very good, but then also it's like 100 tickets. But I don't know. Apparently, Min is telling me that Stefan Schütz, who got to the finals of the challenge on Sunday, was playing Energy Flux in his sideboard, which is a terrifying
Yes, I
thought.
tried not to mention that one because I don't want people to start playing it, but yes, that card is
That
terrifying.
card's just not play. That card is literally not playable in like an open meta. That is just like poopy.
Yeah, like, does that card do anything? Because, Meltdown, at least you can bring it in 7 taxes and say it's a card. But does Energy Flux do anything against any other deck? Like, maybe TES if they play out their hand, but, they don't have to do that. So, yeah, it definitely is a very narrow hate card. And theoretically, if I have my Cannoneer out first, I've changed my mana base so that it doesn't play any artifact lands. I can theoretically just pay for a Cannoneer and then just cheese them that way. So, it's not unbeatable. I don't think there's a single card that's like straight unbeatable. But obviously, like the destroy all artifact cards are pretty good.
All right. So looking at the rest of the cards here from the Neo list, you've got I see Roadside Reliquary. That's the land that can draw two if you have an artifact and enchantment. I see March of
Yeah,
Otherworldly
let's
Light,
pause
which
there. Like, Vogue, did you have anything to say on the land?
Oh, I was talking about that with Dukes was asking about like how to build loam and lands decks, and I think that card is actually a good one or two of in lands. It's kind of expensive, but if you have Saga, it kind of just combos perfectly with Saga, 3 mana divination, then you can loam it back. And you can just use it to tap for mana early on in the game. So like early game, it's a mana source. Late game, it converts into cards. That's kind of a good split card in the lands deck.
But I think the late game in lands is just Field of the Dead against, most decks. So it kind of feels like lands already has that covered. Like, I don't think lands' problem is beating the control decks. I think it's, beating combo decks. And it's not as good against the tempo decks as it used to be.
Yeah, it doesn't like fix any of the fundamental issues with the deck, but I think the card like is a reasonable one or two of potentially.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, Urza Saga and Roadside Reliquary, if they're good friends, who knows? Maybe there's like a ramp deck out there that can put this stuff out. Kind of like, you remember that deck that Javier Dominguez made, the Bant control deck that had like four Uros, a bunch of explorations. It was a very fair Bant style deck that also had Urza Saga. Maybe in like that kind of list, you could use it to power out like any sort of exploration Mox Diamond based sort of thing. I don't know. But you're right though. It doesn't solve any of the fundamental issues, which is why I'm originally I was really hyped up about this card, but then I was like, like what does this accomplish? You know what I mean? Like maybe I don't know, could Control play this card as a loam target, like, to draw cards against Delver? I don't even think that's a thing either.
Yeah, I mean maybe a control deck with Urza Saga and like Sylvan Libraries and something, but yeah. Yeah, you side out Library against Delver anyways. So yeah, you don't have that many artifacts and enchantments you want against Delver.
Yeah, I think this card is bait is my it, like it looks cool on paper, and then you think about how to build. It's a definitely a build around me card, and I don't know how to build around this card yet. But maybe somebody who's out there, diamond in the rough, is smart enough to figure out.
Yeah, but I would basically summarize this set as like pretty interesting. There are a lot of kind of fringy playables. A card we haven't talked about is Kaito Shizuki, which is, it's kind of fringy playable. People have been playing it in Grixis Delver and having some success there, most notably Arcanne. But yeah, there's a lot of kind of fringy playable cards, but kind of the elephant in the room is that, Blue Red Delver is the best deck. It can adapt to beat, pretty much anything. And Neo is not changing any of that. Like, basically, Neo's changing some things on the fringes of how the fringe decks interact with each other, but they don't really interact, you know, too well with Delver, except, you know, I guess you mentioned the Twin Shot Sniper is pretty good there. But in general, these cards are not, you know, really good against Delver or anything like that.
Yeah, it's tricky. Kaito, Ninja Planeswalker, why is this card good?
Yeah, so let me read the card. It actually, I didn't really notice it too much when it was first spoiled, but seeing it in action, it's a 3-mana Planeswalker, 1, a blue, and a black, 3 loyalty. At the beginning of your end step, if it entered the battlefield this turn, he phases out. And that's important because, you know, it basically has pseudo protection on the first turn. So even if your opponent is kind of on the board, you can play it, it phases out, and then the next turn you can untap, play some removal, and then clear some space to protect it. But yeah, +1, draw a card, then discard a card unless you attack this turn. -2, create a 1/1 blue ninja that can't be blocked. -7, you get an emblem with whenever creature you control deals combat damage, search your library for a blue or black creature card and put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So the emblem's not super important, but what this card does do is I think it's powerful against control because you basically, you know, as long as you're attacking, then you're drawing 2 cards a turn. And it does make, you know, some annoying threats that do have to be answered eventually. So it's not very good in kind of Delver mirrors, but it can be good against blue control.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I think there are a lot of good options for blue control out of Delver, but I'm also happy to see people explore new cards, whether or not they're good. I mean, it's just part of the development process, you know, like maybe it turns out Kaito actually is insane. I doubt it based on my stingy evaluation process, but I'm also just fine with it. I mean, if it turns out to be insane, power. Lion Sash is also a very interesting one. A card that I don't think I've heard anybody talk about, though, is Experimental Synthesizer. I can't even Google this because it, like, doesn't show up. But, like, this is a card that I didn't even know existed in the set, but it seems kind of insane. I'm pretty sure I saw it win a Pauper Challenge. So, you know, there you go. One Eternal.
Yeah, Wizards format. Keeps printing cards that generate multiple cards for 1 mana. So there's like Blood Fountain, there's like the Voldaren card. So it's definitely becoming a trend and really affecting, you know, newer formats like Pauper and Pioneer. But yeah, go ahead and finish reading the card.
Yeah. So Experimental Synthesizer is a red artifact for a single red mana. When it ETBs or leaves the battlefield, exile the top card of your library. Until end of turn, you may play that card. And then for 2 in a red, you can sack the synthesizer to create a 2/2 white samurai creature token with vigilance. Activate only as a sorcery. All right, Bob and Voke, I have an exercise for you. I'm going to count down from 3, and I want you to say the first card in Legacy that comes to your mind that this works well with. Ready? 3, 2, a chat you can play along to. 3, 2, 1, go.
Goblin Welder.
Okay, all right, cool.
It wasn't until you read this card aloud that I realized it triggers upon leaving the battlefield.
That's why welding it in and out is so insane, is because you use, like, you're just like doing all sorts of tricks and shit here, man. And even like with the Engineer too, I feel like this card is really good for that deck. Like really, really good for that deck.
Well, the thing is, you need Welder active for it to be really good. Otherwise, it's like just a weird cantrip.
I mean, you play 8 Welders. Like, how hard is it to get Welder active? Like, the only deck that I think would actually be able to kill it is, like, Delver, but okay, fine, whatever. I'm not playing Painter to give a shit about Delver. You know, when I play Painter, I'm trying to feel alive. And,
yeah, welding this in and out certainly seems busted. Draw 2 cards a turn and do other nonsense.
Yeah, and, like, you can make it 2/2 standalone. I mean, that's, like, it's bad, but it's not, like, I've done far worse things, like, play Humility Karn in my control deck before, like...
Right, and the fact that, like, you know, it leaves the battlefield on its own, so, like, if you are able to play both those cards, then this card is a 3-for-1 by itself.
Yeah, apparently it's also done well in the Pioneer Showcase this weekend, according to the McWinsauce. Oh, this is really interesting. So Rob Gladiator is a very veteran control player in Legacy and says that Hidetsugu Consumes All, which we talked about earlier, is maybe the best card in Kamigawa for... Or just in general, which is kind of for legacy, which is interesting.
For Grixis control plus, I mean, I would still say the best card.
I think that card is ridiculously good. I don't know. Well, maybe
like
not.
You can be a good card, but if you don't have a home, then you're not. It's like if you're playing Death Shadow in a format without Fetchlands and Shocks, or like Amulet Titan or Amulet of Vigor in a format without Karu lands. But also, Painter can play the Chromatic Sphere or whatever, Chromatic Star. They already have that looping option, which is probably a better version of the synthesizer. And not even all painterless play that.
Yeah, because I guess you don't have to play the card afterwards.
Yeah, but this draws two cards.
That is true. Yeah, yeah, it does draw two cards.
Draws you a card from dying, and the second one can draw a card from just the ability.
Then you need two of them. Like, I think this card is still really powerful with the welder and engineer.
Okay, cool. Do you guys have any closing thoughts here? Because I'm ready to eat some food or actually play some more Magic. Any thoughts on the set?
Nothing major on the set, but I was kind of alluding to this earlier. Over and under on number of months before Wizards takes action. I'm calling it end of April, and I think Vogue was saying similar.
Vogue actually is the one who convinced me that Roggevon was the only ban necessary. I'm just sorry. Let's get into it for like a quick second here. Vogue is actually the one person who convinced me that only Roggevon needed to be changed as sort of like what's the word that I'm looking for? It's like a precautionary.
I think it's the only card that definitely needed to go, and so it was, you know, a slower way to go about things. But now, you know, now they said they would take action sooner rather than later, so we'll see what that means.
I mean, I haven't even playtested control yet. I mean, I got my butt beat really hard by the player that top aided SCG Philly playing Blue Red Delver. But again, like if you look at Philly, there was literally just one Delver player in the top eight. Whereas for the Mana Traders, 15K, there was five copies in the top eight. And I don't even know how Delver is doing in the weekly challenges. I haven't looked yet. So I don't know what to do, man. Like I'm like exhausted even after like 30 seconds of talking about this. Vogue, do you have any updates on what you think? So you're the one who said just Roggevon. Do you change your mind? Do you think more needs to happen?
Well, I think I'm always of the opinion that you should just ban one or two cards at a time and go from there. I think banning seven cards or something, like, you don't know that you're not going to just make the format a lot worse. And if you were to, some people are like, oh, just ban Iteration, Murktide, and Ragavan at the same time. I think that's kind of a lot. And like, you don't know if that just makes Delver completely unplayable against Urza's Saga, Endurance, Uro. Like, the whole format has continually gotten improvements, so I feel like you can't just nuke Delver completely. At this point, I wouldn't cry if Murktide got banned, but I think the format still is kind of unexplored. Green-White Depths is only like 3% of the meta, and I think it should be like twice as much as that, at least. It's won, I think, two of the challenges post-ban, and it won the SCG events. I think a lot of people playing Control, like the Jeskai Control deck is so bad against Delver, but I feel like you could build more Control decks that are 60% against Delver. I think a lot of it's just that Delver's fine, so people are going to keep playing it, but I think there's tons of room for somebody to create an Esper Control deck and just take down a challenge or something, or build a new version of Jeskai Control and like win an event or something. I think there's tons of space. Like, the Delver deck is obviously very good, but I think you can beat it with Taxes or with Depths.
I don't know either, and that's where I'm going to conclude this thought. I don't really want to know right now anymore. Ban talk just makes my stomach upset. But what doesn't make my stomach upset is our Twitter page. That's at ElopUnters. You guys should go there right now. Hit that follow button. We did stream this live on my page, twitch.tv/unzmtg, where we have healthy discussions and we play solid fundamentals of Magic the Gathering every... I can't even say the sentence properly. Vogue, at Ozymandias172, be sure to check him out as well. I think he's given out so much free content. I think the other day he like put out like a 25-page PhD thesis on how to build your blue-red tempo deck. So that tells you how committed he is to the format. Very good resource to learn if that is what you are interested in. Bob, thanks for being here. Vogue, thanks for being here. I'll catch you guys in the next episode. See ya.